This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the EPDP Small Meeting on Legal Committee Framework, taking place on Wednesday, the 19th of December, 2018 at 1400 UTC. On the call today, we have Dan Halloran, Diane Plout, I don't know why I keep on putting A at the end of your name, I'm so sorry, Kurt Pritz, Lorene Kappen, Leon Sanchez, Margie Milam, Rafik Samick, Tatiana Tropina, Christina Rosette, and Thomas Rickert. I would like to remind all participants, I've noted apologies for today's meeting. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Caitlin Tubergen, and myself, Terry Ackney. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll now turn it back over to our chair, Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Great. Thanks very much, Terry, and thanks, everybody, for joining the call. So the meeting's scheduled for an hour, and there's quite a bit I want to cover, or we want to cover. I see half of this meeting maybe to go through processes and how we're going to run things, and half the meeting going through substance. So if that's okay with everybody, I'll dive into number three on the agenda. You can see, well, I'll just let everybody stare at number two on the agenda. That is our team. And if anybody has any questions or comments about that, please feel free to say so.
Hi, Kurt. This is Leon.
Hi, Leon. How you doing? Go ahead.
I'm great. Thanks. If I heard well, you're expecting that Thomas and I provide some experience on what we did with the CCWG's legal team. Is that correct?
In kind of an as-you-go way. So we had talked about how to lead this group, and if one of us should be the chair, certainly I don't have any ownership in that. I think two things. I think one is for this meeting where we talk about process, I'll kind of lead us through, but when we get into the substance, if you or Thomas or somebody else takes the lead on the pen or something like that in substantive discussions, if that's the way we decide we want to run things, that's fine. The second is, with regard to agenda item three, can you guys hear me?
No, you were cut. Wait.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you at least.
Okay. Okay, so this never happened in all 35 meetings or whatever we've had, but all I'm staring at is a blank screen here. So maybe the screen will, Adobe Connect will relaunch itself. But so I'll pull up Barry's agenda. So in agenda item three, there's a number of items that I want to cover. So we'll kind of cover them all at once as far as how we run things. So we'll run through them. But why that's there is that I just wanted to point out to the group that Leon, you and Thomas have been through this in a similar group. So you can provide some advice as to what works well and what doesn't work well. So that was my thinking there. So I have no visibility into the chat. So somebody will have to send me a Skype if someone's in the queue or you can just speak up.
Kurt, you're all clear.
So with that, I'm gonna
AC room.
Okay. Great. All right. So, with regard,
would you like Thomas or myself to address point three of the agenda?
Well, let me introduce it, I'd like you to opine with your experiences, and then so we have kind of agreement with the group and how to run things. So I don't know how the previous group ran, so this is where your experience is going to come in, but I see one of our major roles, if not the major role, is the formation of the questions. So what you see in the initial report and where we've taken stabs at rewording questions, you see that, you know, we verbally or orally defined issues, legal issues that required resolution before we could move forward on policy discussions. But as so often happens with verbally expressed thoughts, the care that is required to put them into writing isn't quite taken. So the questions as they're captured in the initial report and elsewhere aren't quite of a form where we'd feel comfortable sending them off to legal counsel. And so one of our important roles is to word those questions the right way. So I think for us and our working method, the way we have to proceed here is we have some discussions on our plate already, but during our subsequent discussions in a full team, you know, how are questions raised and what's the trigger to passing them forward to this group. So I think when we're in our plenary meetings or our full team meetings, we need to think about what's the question we want to ask to pass a question on to this group. And I think that's as simple as, so we're going to pass this over to the legal team now, correct? Or something that's captured in the meeting minutes that showed this. And then, like I said, I think one of our primary roles is reforming the question. And then once we have the question, you know, we need to stare at it, figure out the best way to answer it. And I think that is, you know, in certain cases, the expertise is, you know, we have some people that are, we have experts in GDPR sitting at this table. And, you know, we stare at the question and say, gosh, given the law and the experience we have, is the answer obvious? Can we answer it ourselves? We might look at existing resources such as the Hamilton memo or previous work that's been done, or we might task ICANN staff with doing the research to see if that question's already been answered in some other place, and then to see if it's answered in another way, or this is a question we want to pass on to outside counsel. So I think once the question's formed, we need to deliberate on that. And we also need to think about, you know, at what point do we check back with the entire team? So, you know, if we reform a question substantially, should we go back to the entire team and say, this is the question we're going to ask, is this okay with everyone? So you guys want to think about the standard for when we do that. And then I want to talk a little bit about working methods. Even though this is a relatively small team, still 9 or 10 of us, or how many of us there are sitting around the table, it's hard to wordsmith questions and might not be a best use of your valuable time. And so an idea I have here is that say we have 3 questions on our plate so far to answer. We might do some of this work offline. So maybe take, you know, 2 or 3 of us and the 2 or 3 people would independently, of each other rewrite the questions in a form that they think suitable for outside legal counsel. And then, take those 2 or 3 versions, compare them and pick the best of each and, come up with a final question. So, we want to think about, you know, can we do some of this wordsmithing offline and even smaller groups or people working individually and independently and then come back together? That might be a faster way to operate. And so with that, we want to think about how often we meet. Do we meet every week, every other week? You know, how much work can we do offline and via email? I think if we can work via email, that would be terrific. And then finally, in working with outside legal counsel, we probably want to task one of us with composing an introductory letter of some type that tells them who we are, when, you know, once they're found, who we are, what our job is, and you know, how we all our working methods that we've described here. So I don't know exactly what to do since I can't see what's going on in the Adobe room, but I'm going to pause there and ask if there are any questions. So Leon, if you want to talk to any of these issues or anybody else, that'd be great. And anyway, let's go ahead with that.
Thanks so much, Craig. This is Leon. Well, I would like to provide very short answers to the questions that are on point three. And in regard to how are the questions raised to this group and what is the trigger, what we did in the CCWG is that whenever we had some legal issue or legal question within the larger group, then someone would say, okay, so this seems to be something that the legal team needs to have a look at. And if the group agreed, then the initial question was forwarded to the legal team. Then the legal team would have a look at that question and see if it was the right question to ask. And if not, well, then we would reform the question and iron it out so that as a first instance, ICANN Legal would try to provide an answer to that question. And if that answer was not in a satisfactory way to the larger group in terms of, of course, legal alignment, then we would pose that question for external legal counsel. So that is how it worked on a very high level vision, right? So what the legal team would do then, if we forwarded any questions to the external advisors, to the legal counsel, we would, of course, follow up on these questions. We would keep an inventory of questions asked and questions answered. And once we received the reply or the answer from the legal counsel, whether it was ICANN's internal legal counsel or the external legal counsel that we hired for that end, we would review the answers with the group. And if there were any clarifying questions that were needed to be answered, then we would go through this same exercise. We would go to the legal team. We would review the clarifying questions that were being raised. And we would go exactly through this same exercise of touching base with ICANN Legal first. And if the reply was not satisfactory, we would go to external counsel. These, of course, helped us to keep our legal expenses, I wouldn't say low because they were very high, but at least under a certain type of control. So it wouldn't actually go absolutely out of control. As to point C of point three in the agenda of answering the questions and when to use this group's own expertise, ICANN inside counsel or outside counsel or DEP retained legal counsel. Well, this was an exercise that we did through a mailing list before, mainly through mailing list. And we would have meetings every other week, if I recall well. We would hold every other week calls for an hour, and if we had something that was urgent or pressuring in time, we would of course call for an urgent meeting of the legal team. So it was more a question of how urgent the larger team needed an answer from the legal team, then have it an ongoing basis of scheduled calls. So the default was every other week, but we would be standing by and ready for an out-of call at pretty much any time. In terms of this group's responsibility for checking back with and reporting to the entire team, well, as I said before, what we would do was to receive the answers from counsel, either IGN counsel or outside counsel, and review them, then report to the larger group. And if the group was satisfied with the answer, then we would continue our work on the basis of the legal replies that we got, or then we could also raise clarifying questions, as I said. The scheduling meeting frequency, I just talked about that, and working with a provider, do we need an introductory letter? I'm not sure I understand well this question, but I remember that when we retained the two law firms for the CCWG, we did draft a couple of letters with the help of ICANN Legal, because actually ICANN Legal was the one that was retaining the legal law firms, and the CCWG was the client. So there was kind of a strange formula there that I don't quite fully understand yet, even after 2 years of having gone through it. But yes, there should be some sort of letter in which ICANN would retain the external counsel, and the external counsel would agree to act on behalf of the EPDP team as their client and not ICANN as their client. So there is some sort of a straight formula there that I might be explaining in a very poorly way, and I hope maybe Thomas has a better explanation of this point. And so I guess that so far this is something, this is what I could tell you about the experience that we have in the legal team in the CCWG. And I'm happy to follow up and of course, open the mic for other people to speak. Thanks.
Great, Leon. That was, really good. Thomas, I hope you guys don't mind Margie and Christina. Thomas, do you have anything to add to Leon's overview, or are you in the queue with questions as a regular member of this team?
No, I just put myself in. Thanks, Kurt. Hi, everyone. I put myself in the queue to... I have a terrible echo on the call. I'm not sure who that is. I hope you don't have the echo. But... I wanted to add a couple of points to what Leon said, not because Leon's overview was incomplete, but maybe just some learnings based on what we've experienced in the CCWG. So the last point that Leon mentioned, I guess, is the legal technicality. We had ICANN legal contract outside counsel, so that the CCWG would be sort of the beneficiary of the legal advice, and the client-attorney relationship would not be established between ICANN and outside counsel, but between our group and outside counsel. So I guess ICANN legal would be perfectly capable of replicating that for this scenario. I guess one aspect that's worthwhile mentioning is that, you know, in the CCWG, we had an awful lot of legal questions that came up during plenary discussions. But we used the legal committee as a filter so that outside counsel would not just take whatever question is being raised during the plenary discussions and work on those, but they would only be paid for working on questions that have been vetted and sort of approved by the legal committee. The reason for that was that we had outside counsel on many of our calls, and we just wanted to make sure that they are focused on questions that we actually want to get answered by outside counsel. How can we potentially work on a comparable basis here? I think we have some things that are in common. So I think that a legal committee working on framing questions to outside counsel is an excellent idea. I think, though, that the scenario in the CCWG has been different on a couple of counts, one of which is that we had this first feedback loop to ICANN Legal to see whether we can get their expertise or build on legal advice that ICANN Legal had previously sought from outside counsel to avoid the duplication of effort. And I think that made sense. We were discussing a lot of questions with respect to corporate law and other things. I think that's not directly applicable here because I do not think that ICANN has legal opinions on file on data protection issues. You will remember that we've asked ICANN to share with us what they have, and I guess your response at the time was that everything was publicized. So since there is nothing that has previously been documented, unless Dan advises otherwise, there is no previous or historical advice that we could build on, and that makes things quite different. So that, I think it would make sense, and I, at the risk of duplicating what I said during earlier calls, I think it would make sense to come up with an agreement between ICANN.org and our group that we jointly go to outside counsel and then rely on their expertise. So I think the feedback loop to ICANN Legal is potentially not the appropriate route for this group, but joining forces when it comes to outside counsel is, I think, a great idea. Thereby, we would avoid competing legal opinions that have been commissioned by ICANN and by our group, and that potentially helps reducing costs efficiently. As you will know, the CCWG's work has led to the need to replenish the reserve fund, and I don't want to be earning a reputation that every project that I'm involved in as a member makes ICANN look for additional funds. So if we can be more cost efficient, I guess that would be great. Another point that sets apart what we did in the CCWG, and that's actually my last observation for now, and our work, is that I think we don't only need written legal opinions, or I think we don't want lengthy legal opinions that are costly and time-consuming to produce. I think what we want is more or less a legal coaching. You know, have we touched upon all questions that need to be answered? Are we using the right methodology to do what we're doing? What is the most efficient way to get to answers to our questions? And therefore, maybe an alternative route for us is to prepare what questions we want to ask and then just invite outside counsel to a call such as this to provide some coaching and only really come up with legal opinions in writing for questions that can't be answered by a legal practitioner that is experienced in the field. And I actually note now that I forgot one small point on 3C. One, ICANN's own legal expertise. I think if it is meant to just be working such as we work on other small teams, breakout groups just to discuss things and make a recommendation to the plenary, that is fine, but I think I would not support any suggestion of this team or the team members having superpowers by coming up with their legal opinion that would then have the same quality as outside legal counsel's opinion. So I don't want to be seen, and I'm sure that goes for many on this team, as a legal advisor to the EPDP, though I'm happy to inform the discussions of the EPDP with views and experience that I have. That's it. Thanks so much. Have I put all of you to sleep, or is somebody
really good.
Yes, yes, Thomas.
No, so
yes, you have that power.
I'm really sorry. I thought I took myself off mute. So let's hear from Margie and Christina. They've patiently waited in the queue. Thanks. If you didn't hear me, thanks very much, Thomas. Also, that was very informative and helpful. Go ahead, Margie.
Oh, thanks, everyone. Thanks, Thomas and Leon. I think that was a really helpful explanation for how you guys handled this with respect to the IANA transition. A couple of things that you talked about, I think, seem not applicable to us, but maybe we can talk about it. I do worry about being seen as the client for the purposes of the advice. It seems that this is advice that is given to ICANN with our direction as to what the questions should be. Maybe we can get into why it needed to be the CCWG's being viewed as a client. But I don't think, I really have a problem with thinking about it in the context of a GNSO PDP. I don't know, Dan, if you have any understanding as to why that's the case, I would probably suggest we don't do it that way. Other things, I wonder what, whether the going to ICANN first, you know, ICANN Legal first to see if the question's already been answered makes a lot of sense, because I think part of what we're trying to do here is get a fresh perspective on some of these issues. And I recall in the early, earlier in the year when we received the Hamilton advice, that even JJ told the community that there were parts of the advice that ICANN org did not agree with. And so I feel that in this case, it may not be appropriate to have ICANN staff vet the questions based on previous answers unless we understand what exactly they're going to vet it against. In other words, if there's some clear advice from the data protection board, that's one thing, you know, and we're literally citing from one of their documents, and there's no question regarding interpretation. But other than that, I sort of question why ICANN staff would intervene and give their blessing on whether or not the question's been answered already. GDPR's pretty new, and there's a lot of areas where I think getting advice would be helpful. So I have a bunch of other questions, but I think those are the ones that I think we could focus on now. I do want to know if we're going to also talk about how counsel is going to be selected and how we're going to explore the conflicts issue. So those are other questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Margie. And if I understood you, and maybe I didn't, I think in my preamble anyway, I wanted to explore all sources of information. So if ICANN had this question answered before or has answered it in themselves in some other way, I think that would be input to us. I think it's for us to decide, you know, what input to accept and what input to continue exploration on. And, you know, this discussion so far has made me think, you know, each of these questions will be handled on a case by case basis where we look at what information's out there and such. And then, for Dan, or Barry, who is a leader in the ICANN's PCFT, which, does this procurement. I think a briefing, maybe not if at this meeting, it'd be great to get a status, but, you know, to answer Margie's questions about how the procurement's being conducted and, how potential conflicts are being handled. That'd be great for either, email to this team or, briefing at a subsequent meeting. So thanks for that, Margie. Go ahead, Christina.
Hi, Christina Rose up for the transcript. Thanks very much. This has been really helpful, especially the earlier interventions by Leon and Thomas. That was really useful background information. I actually agree fairly strongly with Margie that I do not understand the point of going to ICANN Legal to ask if the question has already been answered. And here's why. It would seem to me that to the extent that there have been other working groups, review teams, et cetera, that have sought and obtained outside legal advice on these topics, I would hope very much that there's some kind of catalog of that. And if not, I guess I'm going to request run that we be relevant here. And to the extent that there isn't advice that's been previously provided to us, you know, asking ICANN, it doesn't seem to me to end up advancing the effort at all, because either they're going to say there already is advice, and in which case that kind of begs the question of why we haven't received it already, or they're going to say there isn't advice, in which case we go forward, or they're going to say there is advice, but we're going to assert attorney-client privilege and we're not going to share it with you, in which case, which is totally fine, but in that case, the existence of that privilege advice should not prevent us from seeking our own advice. So it would seem to me that we can streamline this. You know, maybe there's a checklist of, you know, here are the 10 topics on which, you know, it turns out ICANN has requested advice that we are prepared to share. Here it is. That's my view on that. Second, it would be helpful to hear from, I should put this in context. I'm sure it is no surprise to anyone that the registry stakeholder group, and I assume that this is true for registrar stakeholder group, is particularly sensitive to ICANN's expenditures. And there are a few people in our stakeholder group, and Kurt knows, I'm sure, who I'm talking about, who pretty much every opportunity that we're talking about budget, we hear about the legal expenses for CCWG accountability. I would very much like this group, and obviously we have a much smaller budget, but I would like us to really do everything we can to come in under budget. So my question for Leon and Thomas is this, and to the extent that, Dan, you feel comfortable answering this, feel free. What can we do differently that had these measures, approaches, et cetera, been implemented for the CCWG accountability and its efforts to get legal advice, the cost would have been a lot lower? What should we do differently? Were there things that, in retrospect, perhaps were not the most cost-effective way to go? I think that'd be really helpful to know. Thanks.
Thomas, do you have an answer for that?
I don't know whether it's the only answer, but at least let me try to give it a crack. When the CCWG accountability worked, we were looking at corporate structures to give the component part of what we call the empowered community today a legal personality that can then exercise certain rights. And originally, the community, i.e. our group, had come up with a different concept. So we were pursuing a different legal implementation model to make that happen. And then we heard from the board that they would likely pull the global public interest card if we pursue our plans. So we basically got a signal from the board, and this is no finger pointing at all. I'm just trying to establish what happened. And if my account is inaccurate, please do speak up. But that led to, you know, us having a model being developed using the CCWG's legal advice. ICANN had their own outside counsel working on these matters. And then we had to rework what we did, which again involved outside counsel. And then there was another occasion where the ICANN board said, well, if you do it that way, we again will likely not be able to adopt it. So basically, we had to do our work two or three times in part. That produced duplicates, not even or even potentially triple efforts at our end. And then we had, and I'm not sure whether that's even included in our budget, we had ICANN.org paying for their own legal counsel. And then another complexity I think that can easily be avoided is that we had two firms working on that with different price points. But I think, you know, although they were focusing on different matters, I think that did not go entirely without overlap of their efforts. So in essence, that's why I suggested that ideally we would use the same firm on the advice of which both our group as well as ICANN will rely. And it's important for us to get as early feedback as possible from the board through the liaisons, staff liaisons as well as board liaisons, if there's anything emerging in our recommendations that might make it likely for the board to pull the global public interest card. That's my colloquial explanation of the board having indications that their approval might be barred because they see that there are global public interest implications that might keep them away from approving our recommendation. So if we get an early warning system that's working reliable into our processes, if we avoid hiring multiple law firms doing the same job, if we avoid being forced to redo and change course in the process, I think that helps reduce cost enormously.
It seems to me, Thomas, and everybody else on the call, that we should write a brief note to ICANN with these points. And the points I think we should make are, one, regarding Margie's issue and our issue about, you know, conflict of interest, and to take that into account when making this procurement, and at the same time thinking about the three or so points that Thomas has made. I don't know if I could just assign that way. Margie, I think the conflict of interest note to ICANN is one or two sentences. You know, I've taken a shot at it, but I'm probably not the best person for it. I was wondering if you could write that up. And Thomas, if you could put those five or six sentences you just said into writing, I think that'd be good too. And we can, I'll homogenize those two things, send it to this group, and then we'll send it on to ICANN. But, you know, it's Wednesday, and I think we want to get this off to ICANN before the end of the week and the holiday. So, if it's all right with you guys, I think that'd be great. Diane, do you want to go ahead? Thank you, Margie.
Sure. Thank you, everyone. The input so far has really been insightful and provided maybe some overall viewpoint on what we could do here based upon what's happened in the past and the efficiencies we want to create going forward. To me, I very much agree with Christina and Margie, and taking into account what Thomas has said, that to look to ICANN previously received a legal opinion is not going to be the most productive way forward for us, because clearly whatever opinion that they thought was relevant or important has affected the temporary specification and what it states. And it's our job to be evaluating from a multi-stakeholder viewpoint whether this temporary specification is legally compliant and whether it is best consensus policy long-term. So it seems counterproductive. So instead, to use the board members that are present to, as Thomas has said, be the sounding board to see if, in fact, there's going to be any direct problems with the recommendations we make. Using just a targeted, using this group to listen to the plenary meetings and then target the questions, synthesize them down, vet them based upon our own legal information and knowledge, and then actually formatting them to then pump out whatever questions are really very ripe for legal opinion could, I think, be the best use of our time. And it will also avoid the back and forth and duplicative efforts, as Thomas has explained, that seems to have happened in this group and has happened in other groups. We're going back and forth between ICANN Legal gets very time-consuming and wastes both time and effort. And we're on a very short rope here, so I don't think we have that luxury, nor do we want it to affect us from a financial budgetary standpoint. So those are basically, I'm thinking that we could cut out the ICANN Legal part, synthesize our questions down, use the expertise of this group, and really use efficiencies in time and financial budget.
Thanks, Diane. So I think that so all these points have been really good, and I think that you know, they need to be in the background all the time as we dive into substance. That you know, all these thoughts about operating methodology, efficiencies, managing conflicts, and looking at different sources for legal advice, whether they're existing memos or new legal thinking, all needs to be balanced as we consider each question. And, you know, I think these sorts of things become clearer as we wade through this stuff. So we promised that this meeting would take an hour, so we want to stick to that. Where I think we are is that we as a team are going to send ICANN a brief note advising them that in addition to the other procurement factors they're using, that they should take conflicts into account. And in the interest of efficiency and also creating a product that's not just the thought product of the EPDP team, but one that's accepted by the rest of the ICANN ecosystem, that, you know, they take into account the factors that, we take into account the factors that Thomas raised during his brief talk. So Diane, I'm assuming that's an old hand. So if it's all right, I want to look at the questions we have a little bit. Does anybody want to continue discussing this process and procedure? I think it's a really good discussion, and we could go on for some time. But I want to touch on that. I'm just scrolling through the chat for a second. Emily, go ahead. Oh, Thomas, I'm sorry.
Hello.
Wait, I'm going to cut you off at the mess, Emily. No, Thomas, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Thomas. He was ahead of me.
Thanks so much. Kurt, I think before we move on to the next topic, I think we should get clarity about this group, whether we should ask ICANN even about using independent counsel together. There have been reservations by Emily and Christina, which I share, just to be clear, but I'm not sure whether we can even make an offer to ICANN to seek the same legal counsel if there's a divergence on this matter inside this group. And just to illustrate this again, in addition to what I said in the chat, I would perfectly agree that it is perfectly impossible to use the same counsel if you have a confrontative situation where every party tries to get the best deal for itself. I see this more as a legal counseling or legal coaching initiative where we try to come to a balanced approach for all stakeholders that are facing liability risk. So it's not to make one party benefit more than others, but to find a way that is fair. And I think if everyone works in that spirit, potentially the exercise can work, but I'm not sure what the common understanding of the participants of this call is. And I think we need to get clarity on that before we approach ICANN.
So I won't answer that question directly. I want to hear from Emily first, and then I'll have a suggestion for how we can decide that.
Hi, thanks a lot to everybody who's made interventions so far, and I think it's a good idea to form this group. I think probably along with Christina, I've been fairly sceptical of the value of rushing off and getting external legal advice. And we do need to make sure that we're trying to get the best value we can. We do have quite a few lawyers or lawyer-ish type of people in this group. And we have the advantage that all of us are familiar with the ICANN environment. Some of us are familiar with how registries and registrars actually process the data. And others, of course, are familiar with the needs of those who need to access or feel they need to access this data. We have, one of the things that I worry about is this idea that if you go to a lawyer, you're going to get the answer, particularly on a new piece of legislation like GDPR. And we know from the differences of views that we have sitting around this virtual table from people who are familiar with the law and just come from different viewpoints, that we will probably come out with different interpretations of the law, and we don't yet have much case law or really robust guidance to fall back on. So I'm worried that kind of just flinging a load of questions out to outside counsel isn't going to be the best way of proceeding. I know that others have highlighted similar worries about that. One of the things that we could do, and I'm reluctant to even suggest this because I know we're all completely overloaded, is that we as a group try to work through these questions and answer them. Apologies if that's already been suggested and I've missed it. We try to answer them ourselves, and then that will give some visibility on areas where we are agreeing and probably more likely areas, if not all areas, on which we're disagreeing. So that would be one suggestion. Apologies if I'm just reiterating what other people have said, but I thought I'd just throw in the idea into the mix. Thanks.
You might be on mute.
Thanks very much. So thanks very much for that, Emily. I think we're going into this with eyes wide open, and I think we want to cast the as discussed. I think we want to cast a wide net for where we form opinions on these questions, whether it's our own in-house expertise or some work that's already been done by others, or whether we need to solicit some independent and fresh legal advice. So I think that's good. I think we have two choices with regard to the question Thomas posed. One is that we suggest to ICANN that we employ the same counsel if that's available, understanding that there might be a potential conflict, so that should be taken into account. So we could pose the question to ICANN, letting them know we understand it might be problematic, or second, not even pose that question to ICANN. So I think those are the two choices open to us. And so I guess if I frame that the right way, I guess, you know, maybe a thumbs up for if we even want to pose the question to ICANN that we might pursue the same counsel with the idea of getting consistent advice, understanding that there might be a conflict problem, so that might be impossible. So I guess a thumbs up for that, and a thumbs down if we don't even want to pose the question to ICANN. So I see one thumbs up and two hands up. So go ahead, Dan.
Thanks, Chris. I'm following the conversation. I've had a little bit of audio difficulty plus the kind of morning craziness in my house. But I've been following, and I know there's a lot of discussion, but you guys keep talking about a question. I'm not sure I fully understand what exactly is the question that we'd be looking to answer. If you want, I can already answer. I think when we talked about this last, it was maybe a couple months ago, we talked about the issue with, ideally we find a lawyer somewhere that, you know, is perfectly knowledgeable and perfectly free of any conflicts between ICANN and, you know, never been used by ICANN and has no relationship with any ICANN registry or .land registry or registrar or business that's affected by who is, et cetera. But there's probably no such lawyer in the world. We talked about the time and difficulty of, like, starting from scratch with the procurement. So I think we talked about maybe using one of the previous lawyers that ICANN had used to generate public advice. Like you threw out Hamilton, there was also a couple of firms we used before on who is related issues that we could maybe go to again. And we've already gone through the process of setting up a sort of, they are retained by ICANN, but it's sort of arm's length. I'm not exactly familiar with what happened with in the CCWG work, but it's the same kind of idea where ICANN obviously is the client and it's paying the bills and it's retaining the firm, but it's retaining that firm for the purpose of providing public non-privileged advice on a particular topic, and it's like a, you know, segregated kind of job, because normally it's strange for a lawyer to give advice that might be adverse to your client, and here the poor lawyer is going to be, whatever advice gets dropped in, it might be adverse either to registries or registrars or ICANN, and it'll be difficult to sort out who the client is. But I thought that was the thing to really go with one of the other firms, and I don't have a list off the top of my head, but there's been at least a couple. And but also, if the team wants to go a different way, you know, we're here to support the decision, and we'll take that back and talk about it. Just I think the timing consideration more than anything, it's tricky, as anyone who's been involved in this knows, to, like, A, find the right lawyer, B, go through the process of retaining them and running their conflicts, check, getting the attorney-client relationship, so that can be very time-consuming. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, so I think within the past couple EPDP meetings, Thomas raised this issue of making this solicitation of advice between for the EPDP and also for ICANN more in step, so that we don't have to deal with conflicting advice. And that idea was highly thought of on the EPDP team. And so now we're just, you know, understanding what you just said, Dan, which is right. We're looking for the perfect conflict free attorney or firm that doesn't exist, but how close can we get to it? And so one of, you know, is one consideration that we might, you know, realizing that it's not attainable, maybe even a better place to start is with someone who we worked with before. So I don't think I'm putting this question very clearly to the group, but, you know, do we want to pose Thomas's suggestion to ICANN in an email that says, you might consider, using existing sources so that, you know, however Thomas wants to put it in the three or four sentences he furnishes to us, but do we want to do we want ICANN to entertain that? So do we want to even ask that question of ICANN? So that's where we are. I'm not sure it's going to have a big effect on the final selection of a firm, but I think Thomas is right. We want to get past this. So let's do this. Let's, Margie's going to draft, a couple sentences for us on, conflicts. And Thomas, again, I'll ask you to put in writing, the three or four points you made about, how we want to operate. And let's, put that in a note to ICANN. Let's stare at it. And then, you know, I'll let the group, review it and decide whether or not we want to ask those questions or not. Is that okay with you, Thomas? Can you do that bit of writing? I noticed Thomas put himself on mute immediately when I asked that question.
Great. My Adobe crashed. I just came back in. I typed okay. I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, I saw that. Hi. Yeah, everybody's Adobe's crashing, not just mine, so that's good. So here's my big idea on, if you'll scroll down to the appendix, and Roman numeral one in the appendix are the three questions that we had planned to send at one time to the Data Protection Board. We've since decided not to go to the Data Protection Board, but these are the questions, and they have to do with the first one has to do with one is that if the contact details other than the registered name holder are provided, the Data Protection Board said that person should be informed. So our question went to whether that this meant that consent wasn't required, that the registered name holder can just inform the third party individual, and that would relieve contracted parties of the risk of liability if that technical contact information is published. The second question has to do with the legal versus natural distinction, and if a registered name holder himself identifies as a legal person and is incorrect, and as a result that information is published, again, can the contracted parties be relieved of risk associated with that mistake if they publish that information. And the third question has to do with our discussion around when different legal bases apply and our discussion around 6.1b and 6.1f. So I think, you know, it's 1 minute past the hour. So my big idea coming into this is we could individually take a whack at wording that question that we would put to legal counsel in writing. And if, you know, two or more people wrote one question, then we get like sort of individual takes on what was a sufficient way to answer that question and come up with wording for that. So my proposal to you is that we do that, that if we still think these are the right questions there are questions I think the group wanted answered before we proceed on discussion, we put them into some form that we'd feel comfortable asking an outside legal counsel for. Is that sort of approach acceptable, that everybody on the call would grab one of these questions so we get two or three inputs on each question, and then for the next meeting we'd have some drafts to look at and maybe in that way make headway towards either sending these to independent legal counsel or at least deciding what we're going to do with them once we have them worded in a clear way. Anybody? We're not talking about the next meeting. We're talking about this. So Hadi agreed with my proposal at the start of it. He still agrees. So how do you want to do this? Who wants to take on the first question in this group? Can I have like a raise of hands, or I'll take first question? So silence as a management tool is not working for me. Good. Christina will work on question two. Somebody on staff keeping score? Can somebody else work on question two? Can somebody work on the first one, the third one? Come on, you guys. Yes. Thanks.
I note that we have Christina for question two and Lorene for question one. I can send out the questions and the already assigned volunteers in an email to the list, and then others can volunteer rather than going over more time on the call if you prefer.
That's a good idea. So let's do that. Let's conduct this via email, and that way we can finish the call not too late.
Kurt, so what I'll do to save time is I'll randomly assign volunteers except for the ones who volunteered themselves. Uh-huh. And if anyone has an issue with the question they were assigned, we can discuss over email. But rather than people having to affirmatively sign up, I'll just volunteer. The member question they're assigned to, and they can switch to it like.
Okay. Okay, well, let's give every, send out an email, give everybody a chance to volunteer for a question, and then, after a day or so, we'll volunteer. And then to the extent so we have a couple action items. I don't know if Caitlin wants to go through them, but Margie's going to give us some language this week about conflicts. Thomas is going to give us some language about the points he made about efficiencies and existing legal advice and existing counsel to ICANN. We're going to do an email poll to take, and so those two things should be done this week. Barry, it would be great if someone from ICANN could provide a written status of the procurement and the timing of it, so as we go into the holiday, we kind of understand what that is. And then we're going to get these questions assigned to people this week, and somehow between now and January 2nd provide some writing of that. That would be good. All right, so we've got a couple more, or at least one more volunteer. Thanks, everyone. So thanks. I hope you found the call useful. And thanks very much for getting on and taking up this time slot in your day once more. I'll be talking to you all tomorrow, so have a great day. So long.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.